We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
I live under the greatest horror known to man, the Homeowners Association. The scrutiny of their esoteric rules is benign only to them. You may hear tales of HOAs that are sticklers to strict laws, but let me tell you that mine is far worse. I once saw them cite an old lady for undesirable decorations on a house. They were napkins that were blown around a porch after a barbecue. Driving through the streets, the neighborhood almost looks like a movie set. Within minutes of being expressed, all sense of personality is crushed. Still, I moved here at a much better price than if I lived in the city. I have more space too. For the cost of my house, I would be living in a small studio apartment that I wouldn't even own. So, I put up with the HOA simply by almost never being at home. The only downside for me is the commute. I have to travel far to get to work, and even further if I want to do anything recreationally. But it's not too bad, knowing that I've never caused any reason to be cited. Until one day. I was sitting in my little cubicle at work when I got an email. At first, I thought it might have been spam. It was a citation from the HOA that I was being written up about something. I thought this couldn't be the case since my home looked pretty much the same as when I first moved in, but I opened it anyway, just in case. My disbelief faded. It must have been real, because it had all my details that I used when I signed for the house. Through some hoity-toity nonsense speak, that they were obviously using to try sound more professional than they actually were. It was a warning about a fine I'd get if I didn't clean my yard. This couldn't be the case, I thought to myself. But sure as day, there was an attached picture of a heap of mess on my lawn. It didn't look like a trash can had fallen over. The pile was of large pieces of junk containing a mixture of broken furniture and discarded housing materials. Furious, I quickly opened my doorbell camera feed and checked through the day. Sure enough, there it was. A dusty-looking pickup truck that pulled over, quickly launched the stuff off the back, and then sped off. Now, you'd think this would suffice, that I had good reason that it wasn't me, and that I was a victim of what looked like a random dumping. However, nothing I said absolved me of any wrongdoing. I would be fined if the site wasn't cleared by 10 p.m. that evening. Begrudgingly, I got on with work and sped back, hoping I had enough time to clear it up by the set deadline. When I pulled up to my drive, I was daunted by the task that lay ahead of me. The mound of rubble looked smaller on the wide-angle lens of my doorbell camera. In person, however, it was a heaping mountain of splintery, rusty, nail-riddled junk. I went to my shed, put on the thickest work gloves I could find, and prayed to the hepatitis gods that I wouldn't get a visit from them. Fortunately, I had a small trailer attached to the back of my car. I'd used it to move from the city all the way to this neighborhood in one trip, knowing that the cost of renting a van would have been astronomical for how little stuff I owned. I loaded piece after piece, narrowly avoiding cuts and splinters with each item hurled into the trailer. It was getting close to the deadline when I was nearly finished. Aside from a few small pieces skewed around, the last large item remained. A door, inset into the lawn soil, from how much weight had been on top of it. It was old-looking, but not decayed, more so in the sense of its build and look. It had inset grooves that reminded me of a museum piece. Even the smell of damp soil brought out that aroma you only get from an antique shop that only stocks from the freshly deceased. The doorknob was a marred brass that had long lost this metallic luster. I tried to pry the edges with my fingers for the perch, but couldn't get between the wood and soil. Goodness knows how, but it was perfectly flush with the ground, almost like it was painted there. I grabbed a thin piece of scrap from the trailer to try prying it from the ground, at least enough for me to get my hand under. But my luck being the way it was, the piece of scrap snapped almost instantly. I stood there for a few minutes, trying to figure out what to do. I lived alone and far away from friends, so I had no one to call for a helping hand. I was put off the idea of asking a neighbour, knowing that the HOA could be any one of them, and I had no intentions of interacting with them. So I did what any man would do in this situation. I tried whatever I could think of as soon as it popped into my head. I kicked down on a corner to see if the other side would rise up an inch. Nothing. I looped a rope around the doorknob and pulled to the side, hoping it would slide out. Nothing. I even tried to see if the previous house owner had left any old tools in the shed. Nothing. The only bit of movement I got was the doorknob idea, which gave a slight, barely noticeable rise when I pulled. So I focused on that angle and tried more ideas. If pulling to the side didn't help, maybe using it as a handle would. So I tied a rope around it and heaved upwards. The door rattled with each pull, almost like someone trying to check a locked door, but the bevel of the knob made it so my terrible tying skills were made apparent. The rope slipped off every time I felt I had a good purchase on it. This left me with my final option, to try it by hand. My grip was far from that of a rock climber, so I didn't feel confident in this, but it was worth a shot. I squatted down, gripped it with both hands, and heaved as hard as I could. That minute lift gave, but nothing more than that. Whatever this was made from must have been the heaviest wood known to man. No wonder the people ditching it didn't want to take it to the dump. Knowing that I'd somehow have to heave this into a skip was just as daunting as handling it in the moment. With a heavy huff, I gave it one last hard pull. As I adjusted my grip, the doorknob did what it was designed to do and twisted as I pulled. And as it did, I heard a familiar click. Suddenly, my ass was wet on the lawn as the door flung open. In hindsight, the thing was the weight of a normal door that I'd forced open with all the might I could muster. This door, haphazardly left crooked on my lawn, opened, and a gust of musty air seeped from underneath. And when I stood up, I saw why. The wind whistled on the edges of the now upright door, which somehow opened into a tunnel, perfectly lined up to the angle the door had been left. I was no longer bemused by the incident. However, the swirl of emotions never settled, so I still can't quite place how I truly felt about the situation. The door sat nearly upright, just tilted far enough that it didn't immediately snap closed, but that angle was the furthest it sat. I tried pushing down on it to somehow snap it off its hinges to try get rid of it, knowing the new hole in my garden was going to have to be a future issue, but to no avail. I dared not look into the hole for a while. I was daunted by the prospect of the job. Had it breached any important pipes or wires? Was it a straight drop, which would be a danger to the neighborhood kids? What could even have made such a hole in such a short time? I hadn't seen anything that could have caused it on the video from the doorbell camera. All I saw were the workers dumping the junk in my yard. This hole was a whole new development, and something the HOA would have a field day with. When I finally peered in, something struck me as odd. On top of the oddity of the whole situation was the angle in which the hole went. It was steep, but sloped, just enough to be able to walk down, and my cell phone's flashlight didn't tickle the depths it boasted. Even sticking my arm as far as I could didn't reveal where the hole ended, though this was me lying on the edge, so I couldn't reach far. I didn't dare walk down without a plan. So that was the next step I took to figure the whole situation out. I grabbed a helmet I had stashed for the bike I never used, a flashlight I had for if the power ever went out, and a stick from the junk pile in case I needed to poke something. I was obviously inexperienced, but I didn't let this stop me from trying to scope out what I was dealing with. The door, when opened, never lay flat, standing nearly vertical, just past 90 degrees. But it held open untouched. So I slowly made my way in, using my dim flashlight to penetrate the thick darkness below. I made sure I was always in sight of the exit. However, the further I went in, the deeper it went. I took a few more cautious steps before I realized that the tunnel did not end, but rather, it split in different directions. Whatever this hole was, it seemed to lead into a system of underground channels that ran much further than I planned to go. So, I had to rethink my plan. I made my way back out and put on my thinking cap. From what I saw, it was just hollowed out dirt, but my new fear was the direction one of the tunnels went. It turned towards my house, making me worry about the structural integrity. If this ran under the foundations, I would be in a world of trouble if the unsupported hollows fell through. I decided on one last foray into the darkness, this time equipped with something to help me find my way back. I tied a couple rolls of garden twine around a heavy piece of junk I placed back in my yard, and I unwound it as I went back in. I had one hand slowly unraveling the twine, while the other held the flashlight. I had the stick under my arm for the time being. Going down again, a strange thought crossed into my head. One that whispered before, but feeling it the second time was too patterned to notice. The slope had rhythmic bumps, interludes of rounded edges that were too perfectly aligned to be natural. Near smooth in the middle, but very apparent when looking at the concave sides. It was almost like there were once earthen stairs that had been worn down through use. I didn't want to dwell on that too much, knowing this hole wasn't here for my entire time living here, so to see something so used was too much to bear. The whistling of the wind outside faded the further I went in, mixing in with some faint chatter. Maybe some passerbys were just as confused as me about an open door on a lawn. And soon, I was at the crossroads I found before. I peeked left and right, but knew the left turn would lead under my house, the section I was most worried about. I toyed in my head for a while about just turning back, maybe calling a professional, though a professional what? I did not know. Someone else to take a look, but I mainly just wanted to make sure that my house would at least make it through the night. This decision was soon taken from me. The wind, that was only a whine before, gave a loud howl. It was a strong gust between the many small whispers it had been doing until then, but the gust must have lined up perfectly with the door. It slammed shut with an earthen thud rather than a wooden bang you'd expect from a door slam. The line was taut now, the twine held in place by the closed door, so I followed it back up to try get it loose and try again. Maybe next time, propping the door open for security. But as I gave the door a push, it didn't budge. Silly me was pushing with the muscle memory strength used to open a regular door, but this was horizontal, so I realized I needed to add some heft to pry it open. So I tried again, with more gusto. Nothing. I forward at this, trying again, harder. Nothing. Worried, I perched the leg higher in the slope and shoved. Nothing. I crouched damn near into a ball, twisted the handle and jumped with the door flush on my back. Nothing. It didn't even give a rattle, even on my strongest attempt. It was well and truly stuck now. I bashed repeatedly, hoping that the voices outside could hear me, but all that remained was silence. Pressing my ear against the door didn't even yield the whines of the wind outside. Eventually, the silence was broken, but not from the outside. It was subtle at first, but unmistakable. There was a scuttling sound in the dirt deeper into the tunnels. The banging seemed to have stirred something dwelling in the darkness. This left me with the ultimatum of my life. Stay and keep trying the door, knowing I was far into a dead end, or go further in to find an alternative exit, to at the very least have a chance to move away from whatever was waking in the tunnels. I gave a final, silent heave, putting my entire body into a hard squat, making sure the doorknob was turned, but to no avail. I was stuck with option B. I knew the twine I brought was finite, but I still opted to use it as much as possible. I made my way to the crossroads and made the left I originally settled on when I first went in. My hope was that if this was a system centered around my house, there might have been another exit in my house, though the thought of that was something I didn't want to dwell on too much in the moment. I carefully carried myself forward, trying to stay composed between more scuttling sounds or dirt sprinkling from the low ceiling. My senses were on edge, and they only got more heightened with each step deeper. I kept my light downward, like the headlights of a car. I didn't want the bloom to bleed too far forward, in case something surprised me up ahead. I kept my presence as small as possible. Minimal sounds, slow breathing, and slow steps. But a sound trickled into my ears, making my hair stand on end. Something so distinguished and recognizable that I couldn't logic it away as dirt or paranoia. A huff of a deep breath into the tunnel behind me. This was only exacerbated when, on top of that, I felt the slightest tug on the twine. It must have stepped on a bit of slack in the darkness. The relief I felt from having looked into the correct direction was overwritten by the feeling that it was stalking me from behind. No matter how far I moved, it seemed to still be there, matching my pace as if watching me like prey. This was coupled with an intrusive thought that this was only making me move deeper and deeper into the tunnels, further away from the only exit I knew of. I was so preoccupied with this that my face made a soft thud with the wall in front of me. And this was the tipping point for whatever was following me. Like the pop of a starting gun at a race, whatever stalked now hunted. I heard its skitters rapidly pound the ground as it sprinted towards me. My fear of a dead end was short-lived as I saw it was another split. I dropped the twine and grabbed the stick from under my arm, knowing the twine wouldn't last to run, and I needed my arms free to run as fast as possible. Having turned left before, I chose to go right this time and sprinted away, hoping I was at least matching its pace to keep distance. With the light now pointed forward, I could see the next crossroad. I chose left and kept running, still hearing the scratching sprint behind me. Another turn, another crossroad, more turns. It wouldn't let up. And as I reached another fork, I heard a new set of scratching that started heading in my direction. Another one joined the fray. This forced my choice to the direction opposite to the sound. I ended up making so many turns and splits that I was well and truly lost. There was no way to backtrack my directional choices with how preoccupied I was. Turn after turn, randomly choosing whenever a choice presented itself, I reached another split. But this time, something was in front of me. With flickers of my flashlight swings from my sprint, I didn't get a good look at the thing. But what I did take in was sharp. Claws with concaves like they were made for tunneling, but doubled as extremely dangerous weapons. I didn't have time to stop, so I lurched my arm into a swing and lashed out at the thing with my stick. It barely gave any resistance before shattering. Without a doubt, it did no damage, but it stunned it enough for me to slip by. I discarded what remained of the stick and headed away from the thing, knowing that the others were also catching up. I dipped around bends and turns as best as possible, but I knew my endurance was reaching its limit, and these things showed no signs of slowing down. This was their domain, and they held all the advantages here. As I ran, I caught glimpses of the walls. Occasionally, there were miles of marks in a symmetrical pattern, obscenely long gashes left by their tunneling claws. Some were set deep, more than lethal if they were to hit me, showing me the consequences of being caught. I took a turn fast, and my foot caught on something. I flopped face down into the dirt, my helmet saving me from a broken nose. If slowing down was a danger, this was a death sentence. I pulled my leg up to check the damage, trying to be conscious of every second spent. But as I looked down, I saw what I had tripped on. A body. It wasn't human. It was one of them. Its maw hung agape, life long since gone from its eyes. Signs of decay had set in all over. The thing that made me rule out death of natural causes were the puncture wounds littered all over the body. Whatever did it went deep, but some that must have ricocheted stuck out. Thin metal needles protruded from some of the wounds. I was distracted. I realized I'd been staring too long, enamored by the sight before me. At the pace that I heard them, they should have been on top of me any second. However, they weren't. I could still hear them, but they slowed, then stopped. There were a few confused putters before, as quickly as they came, I could hear them slowly scatter away. I didn't have time to ponder on what caused this, as I heard more steps coming towards me, but these were much heavier. Powerful thuds that I could almost feel while still on the floor. In the direction I was headed, I saw a new figure, larger, more humanoid, and slowly lumbering my way. Its eyes reflected a faint green, and it was holding something in both hands, but I couldn't see what. I tried to stand back up, but I couldn't. My leg twisted under me, and I could tell the heat I felt was my leg swelling. Even if I'd made it up, I did not know which direction to run. There was doom in either direction. I slumped back down, choosing to die on the comfort of the floor than the pain of running. And as the lumbering behemoth walked up to me, it stopped short. I looked back up, feeling that it was the last thing I would see, but was stunned, trying to process what was in front of me. Beneath all the metal and technology that stood there was a man. I could see parts of his lower face, and I recognized the gloved hand of a human. The top half of his face was covered with a helmet that seemed to have lenses where his eyes should have been, most likely a peripheral to let him see in the dark. He was decked out in something I'd only imagined from a sci-fi movie. I saw what he held in his hand, some sort of gun, though one I didn't recognize from my limited knowledge of current era weaponry. Looking at him, just stood there, not saying or doing anything. I think he was as stunned as I was. Eventually, it was him who broke the silence. "Who are you?" he muttered. His mind probably settled on it in the jumble of thoughts we were both in. I started to introduce myself, but I think the reality of the situation kicked in, so he interrupted me before I began and told me to follow him. So I did. And he only led me to more questions. Where he took me was a stark contrast to the dark hells I just came from. I was in a makeshift room carved into what looked like a scientific facility. People worked on intricate machines, chemicals and computers. A few men standing around were in the same exoskeleton suits as the man who brought me here. To avoid collapse, thick metal beams acted as pillars to the installed metal ceiling. The metal panels lined the walls, which looked structural as well. Each time someone glanced at me, they would do a double take. The second time, wearing a shocked expression, followed by quickly getting back to whatever task they had on hand. I don't know who'd win if there was a competition for more questions. I sensed no hostility though, a step up from the horrors I'd been pulled from. Soon, I was brought to another man wearing another exosuit, but marred with more damage and a collection of symbols which I could only assume marked his higher rank. "Hey, Captain, I got a weird one. Found this guy on patrol." He looked at me inquisitively, a pause hanging in the air, before he plainly demanded, "Speak. Tell me everything." A simple request. I had no reason to hold anything back, so I caught him up with everything that had happened. He was bemused that this started with me just trying to sort out a fickle HOA situation, but he had no reason to doubt anything I said. After more thought, he finally uttered a call. "Take him to the room." "Wait, what's going on? How do I get back?" This is all I managed to mutter as my arm was grabbed and pulled away. I blurted out more questions, but they were ignored. I tried asking my now prison guard, but he stayed silent under the watchful eye of the captain. When he let go, I was in a room with a few others. This crowd did not look like they stumbled in here like I had. They were dressed like some of the people working the equipment in the main room. "Stay here, we'll figure out what to do," he said in an assuring tone, though there was only so much assurance I could have in this situation. He closed the door, and I heard it latch shut. In a futile attempt, I tested it, and it was indeed locked. Questions still swirling around my head, it wasn't long before I was the one to broach conversation. "What is going on? What is this place?" A pause of silence followed as they gathered their thoughts, but one of them spoke up, giving me their best attempt at enlightenment. "So, you really don't know what this place is? You weren't sent here from the higher-ups?" one man said. Before I could answer, another captive deduced the answer. "Look at him. He's not in uniform. He's just some guy. This doesn't make sense." I started to get frustrated. I was in some place beyond imagination, with horrors above my comprehension. Yet I was treated as the anomaly here. So I snapped at them. "Look, I just stumbled in here. I have no idea what's going on. I've been lost, got chased, nearly damn well killed. Just tell me something. Anything. I don't know what to do." I trailed off at the end, my outburst quickly losing gusto, knowing that they were as captive as me. Another pause before the first man spoke up. "My name is Dr. Jameson, and you've somehow wandered into Base Ivory of the..." He was cut off by a hushed "too much" before he continued. "Look, you've somehow stumbled into an experiment. We found a way here through a door, a sort of dimensional anomaly. We scientists were stationed here to make grand discoveries. You've seen our personal guard, the men in the tech fits. They were assigned to protect us while we carved out an outpost to work in. However..." As he took a moment, the others' faces dropped. The signal of bad news. "Our door just stopped working. Or at least somehow jammed shut. We don't know if it was intentional from the higher-ups. They've been known to experiment on the experimenters. But since this happened, we've not been allowed to work on an exit strategy. The TechFit mercs have us working on our experiments, regardless of circumstance, following the commands of those who sent us here, and they refuse to deviate despite the circumstance. This room is where they put people who try to do otherwise." At this, more silence fell, but I had a lingering thought itching in the back of my brain. "So, what does this mean for me?" He just looked back at me one more time and said, "I don't know." This ended the conversation, as we all had things to think about. Eventually, a call was made from outside that it was time to sleep. So, we settled into the bunks. I awoke to some yelling and what sounded like the pinging of metal. At this, I bolted up and looked around. It seemed I was the only one perturbed by this, but my motion seemed to have stirred Dr. Jameson awake. "What's going on?" I asked. "Probably the moles. One must have gotten close." "The moles?" I asked back. "Yeah, you said you were chased, so I'm guessing you saw them, or at the very least heard them. Blind, mammalian, tunnelers. We discovered them after losing contact from the higher-ups. So we were never given a name for them, so we just called them moles." In my head, I scoffed at the mundane name, but chose not to let it out to keep conversation flowing. "So, what are they?" "We don't know. It's one of our tasks down here. Examine local species." He spoke of this like a job, rather than a fight for survival. But his casual nature did give some slight assurance. Having run out of questions, he took my silence as the end and rolled back over to sleep. Knowing there was nothing more to do, I did the same. When I woke next, there was a metallic bang. The door rattled from the other side, and an authoritative voice yelled for us to wake up. With the lack of urgency the others had, I assumed this was just a routine wake-up call. We stretched the sleep away and opened the door. A guard stood there and glanced at the room and stepped aside. I furrowed my brow in surprise, thinking that if we were to escape, he had left more than an opening. But I was even more surprised when I saw the others meander out of their own accord. What's going on? Are we being let go? I asked Dr. Jameson as he walked by. It's breakfast. We're being let out to eat, he replied. I lowered my voice to a hush. But this is the perfect time to escape, no? It's just one guy. I glanced over to him. He doesn't even have a weapon. This gave Dr. Jameson a chuckle. And go where? We're safer here than out there, and they know this. At this, he joined the line filing out, and I followed in suit. We ended up in a sort of makeshift mess room. Tables and basic kitchen appliances. Stacked high were large boxes, and each person in turn put their hand in and pulled out a random metallic bag. Damn curry, I hate this one, one muttered, and he took it over to a kettle and started preparing it. Everyone pulled something out, and I was last, reaching in to find a bag labelled lamb. I looked at it, confused, and Dr. Jameson peeked at what I had. Wow, lucky. That's the best one. I'll trade you, he muttered. Do you not get to choose what you get? I asked back. I mean, yeah, you could, but the randomness of what you eat is damn near the only entertainment you can get down here. I'm pretty sure hitting the lamb jackpot is what gets some people sane down here. I looked down at my bag of food, knowing he probably needed this more than me. So I agreed to the trade without seeing what he had. His bag was labelled Cowboy Casserole. I followed the instructions in the bag and prepared it as best as possible. It wasn't a spectacular taste, but it wasn't bad either. These were probably standard issue MREs they'd brought with them when they set this place up. Damn near unperishable food for long expeditions. When Dr. Jameson opened his lamb bag, I expected a divine aroma compared to what I was putting up with. But no, it was just as mundane as mine. I think they must have created a placebo of a lamb hype. Maybe someone initially started the rumor, knowing it would add some excitement to someone's day and have others looking forward to something. Thinking that it was a pragmatic ideal, I kept my thoughts to myself and ate as much as possible. When we were done, we were lined up. The soldier walked back and forth a few times, glaring at us occasionally, before speaking up. As you know, delinquency and insubordination is not tolerated. You have been designated to the room indefinitely for your actions. However, this is your daily chance to come out. Return to work and do not cause trouble for the others with your plans. Silence fell, and a few dropped their heads in defeat and stepped out the room. After a while longer, he spoke once more in a defeated tone. Okay then, everyone else, follow me back to the room. The remaining people shuffled back, myself included. Knowing I'd be stuck back in that room for a while, I paid more attention to my surroundings, trying to get as much information as possible. I noticed much more now that adrenaline wasn't altering my focus. I saw things they were working on, sampling the dirt, picking apart the bodies of the moles and tinkering with pieces of the armor the guards wear and other technologies. I got some glances back, presumably from people who hadn't seen me the first time around. But one scientist in particular had a startling gaze. He looked like something in his head clicked into place, maybe an epiphany on something he was working on. Yet his expression never shifted back to his work. It was solely focused on me. When we returned to the room, we were simply told to await further instruction. The conversation in the room was dry. Either they were socially inept or purposefully closed me out, and I couldn't figure out which. The closest to answers I had was Dr. Jameson, but the way he was cut off showed they didn't trust me with the information. If I could get him alone, I was sure I could get him to spill more details, but it was impossible with this room situation. Suddenly, there was a scuffling sound from outside, and people were shouting. I couldn't distinguish what was said through the thick door, but it sounded heated. The door banged, then quickly opened, the scientist that was pressed up against it falling in. His face scrunched up in anger, and expletives were thrown at the guard who ignored him as he locked the door. However, the second the door clicked, his facade dropped, his expression lightened up, and he set to a sly grin. When I got a good look at him, I recognized him as the man glaring at me when I walked back to the room. "Hi," he opened with. However, it wasn't a universal greeting to the people in the room. It was directed solely at me. Hi, I mused back. Not deterred by my hesitation, he went on, a lot more open than the people I'd been stuck with so far. "My name is Dr. Kirkland. You're obviously not from around here. So, how did you get here?" he asked. I went on to explain my situation, though I wasn't happy with the lack of reciprocation each time I did this. His face displayed his feelings on each bit of information he extracted from my tale, not hiding his thoughts on my predicament. After some deliberation, he broke his silence. "Look, I want to get out of here, need to get out of here, and I want your help." I just wore a shocked expression at this. He continued, gesturing to the people around him to listen in, who were now leaning in to pay attention. "We're safe here. We have use. You don't." He pointed at me. "Your safety is not guaranteed." He almost sounded like a salesman, giving his best pitch to sell his idea. But I also couldn't refute his logic, especially with how little I knew. Before I could even respond, the roused crowd started to pipe in. "Sure, we have use, but to compromise the facility with escape is grounds for termination. They would not let that fly," one chimed in. Hums of agreeance resounded from the audience. "Even if we did get out, where would we go? These aren't some pushovers like the FBI or CIA," another person interjected. I was surprised that he spoke so lightly of what I was led to believe were the best. This must be deeper than I could possibly imagine. "This is a room full of the smartest people in this dimension. They call the shots, but we're the brains behind everything. You don't think we could manage something easy like this? I know for a fact some of you have achieved feats that make this look like child's play." At this, he shot some specific glances to certain people, which they looked back with growing confidence. Which again, I had no context to what he was talking about. "Remember, we don't just work here. We made this place. You didn't think I would think ahead." At this, Dr. Kirkland pulled out a pale blue device with a mismatched asymmetrical pattern on the end, almost like the teeth of a skeleton key. If his speech hadn't fully convinced everyone, this revelation certainly did. In turn, everyone who thought themselves of use chipped in with info or services they could provide. "I know the code for the equipment room. There's a set rotation the guards follow. I made the schedule. The north side tunnel is the least guarded. We'll have our best shot there." Excitement grew in the room, and I started falling for it. It seemed, individually, no one had any luck towards escape. But together, they were the jigsaw pieces that fell perfectly into place. Once the plan was set, all we had to do was wait for the perfect time. One man had his ear to the door, the room silent for him to make the call for action. Dr. Kirkland stood by with his strange key, ready to move on the signal. After many agonizing moments, the man up front raised his hand and everyone snapped into place. Though these people were only the scientists, I could tell they had some form of military training. No words were uttered, only silent hand motions directed the squad on how to move. Even the way they walked minimized sound a lot. Compared to them, I sounded like a lumbering giant, even though I was trying my best to mimic their posture. We slipped around corners, the front man moving with confidence, knowing we were moving through blind spots. We reached the turn, and he double-checked if it was clear. He made a motion with his hand, and another man turned the corner. When I moved round to follow the rest of them, he quickly entered a combination on a number pad and opened a thick metal door. Inside was something that looked like something from the future. Equipment that I hadn't the faintest idea did what. But it seemed I didn't need to, because each scientist went straight for what they needed. Some grabbed goggles that had a green hue on the lens. Two grabbed the large rifles I saw the guards carrying, and others grabbed things I hadn't seen before. Since I was apparently not given a crash course on how this tech worked, I was simply left with my bike helmet and flashlight, much to the degrading looks from the others. If bets were placed on who would die first, all of them would have bet on me. We left the room as silently as possible. In a single file, I followed the point lead around more turns. We passed by rooms that looked like they were used for storage or an office, but other rooms were so beyond what I understood that I had no idea what they did in them. As we reached the straight tunnel that transitioned from metal to dirt, a sure sign of an exit, we heard yells from behind. I couldn't fully understand what they said, but I picked up on the distinct word, escaped. They knew we were gone, and would soon be behind us. And now, the chase was on. We stopped just shy of the darkness, some adjusting their goggles to see in the dark, others pulling out strange-looking devices that lit up the tunnel in front of them. Dr. Kirkland turned to me, an adrenaline-fueled grin beaming at me. "Okay, where is the entrance you came in from?" he asked. "What? Oh, I don't know. I was lost when they found me," I replied. His face dropped. "Wait, did you hinge this entire plan on that?" Dr. Jameson blurted. A look of confidence reappeared on Dr. Kirkland's face, though this one looked more forced. "Don't worry, if he got in, it means we can get out," he roused. We all made our way deeper, footsteps picking up behind us. I didn't have the heart to tell him that my door jammed, just like theirs. It wasn't long until all hell broke loose. I was held up in a dark cubby with Dr. Kirkland, running so fast that some of us got split up on the first fork and the scuttling forced more of us to separate. The ones carrying the rifles were needed at the front, but lagged behind due to the weight. And when I saw on fire, it sent the scientist near horizontal from the kickback after only a few shots. What shots landed on the mole well and truly killed it, but the loss of control sent a few shots into innocent bystanders. The wounds left behind were near perfect holes straight through, the wall behind having the remnants of metal spikes. A caseless railgun shot that could be used for long excursions, I was told during some downtime. I'd lost track of Dr. Jameson, but the footsteps, followed by shots and screams, told me that the guard's leniency had been spent. It was either stay and work or die, and we had all chosen the latter. Dr. Kirkland and myself were holed up in a cubby, just big enough to fit us, a blind spot if someone ran past. We stayed quiet when we heard a scuttling and felt a breeze of moles rushing towards the commotion. "I have to get out. I have to get out, Dr. Kirkland kept muttering to himself. Despite the chaos and all the lives lost, he was driven to get out. Him not saying us or we had me rethinking his pragmatic coaxing of the group. Were we just fodder to help him escape? There were noises still, but far off. So, I had to find out. Talk to me. You had a plan to get here. What do we do now? I whispered. This seemed to break him out of his stupor, and he sat there for a while in silence, thinking. I need to get out. We need to get out. Wait until they've passed, and we move forward. It was such a vague plan, no thought beyond what I could have come up with myself. What sickened me was the lack of initiative to help the others. We just sat there, hearing their cries for help. They were secondary to his own escape, myself included most likely. So I pried on what I was more curious about in that moment. Why do you need to get out so badly? I asked bluntly. At this, he took another pause, contemplating a response. I have a family. I miss them. We were sent here on the promise of returning. We were to set up the facility, then cycling scientists to work here. I was one of the first in. I need to get out. I need to see them. He was fixated on this. He must have thought this humanized his actions, but the screaming and dying in the distance made it all the more selfish. Who knew how many families were losing someone here, just for him to try see his? All I knew was that he grabbed one of those insanely put together weapons, so sticking with him was still my best shot. The screaming and fighting were dying down. We quieted down ourselves, as our surroundings did. And as we did, heavy and deliberate footsteps approached. No doubt one of the guards. They were creeping with caution, on the lookout for hiding scientists and violent moles. A barely audible whisper trickled into my ear. If he sees us, point your flashlight in his eyes. I will do the rest. My mind boggled with responses. Was he planning on us taking the guard down together, or using me as bait? I no longer had faith in his motives. However, the footsteps were drawing nearer, and each step taken was taking away time to reply. I hadn't decided on what to do, so I let myself move in the moment. The steps clunked to a stop before us, and a pause lingered in the air. The crackle of static rang out, and he spoke into his radio. I've got one here. Ready to engage. Click. We were compromised, so now was the time to strike. I heard Dr. Kirkland yell out, and out of reflex, I flicked my light on and swung it around, looking to get it in his visor. But as soon as I found his head, we both stopped. He wasn't looking at us, but was looking further down the hallway. However, our outburst made him turn to face us, to which he flinched from being blinded by my light. I guess Dr. Kirkland was right. Whatever they used to see in the dark seemed to flashbang his vision with a direct light source. A screech followed straight after, but it wasn't from the guard. It wasn't even human. A sprinting thud crashed from where he was looking at, and as I turned, a mole dove straight at us. Dr. Kirkland fired a few stray shots, and one pierced straight into his abdomen. But like before, the shots also sent Dr. Kirkland falling back, and this left him no time to get out of the way. With the mole's momentum, it landed claws first into both Dr. Kirkland and the guard, who never stood a chance while blinded. The guard fell from his hit, and the mole dug its nails wildly at both of them, goring them into a mess. Each swipe slowed down until it stopped, still perched between them, and slunk onto the floor. Turning my light towards it more, I saw it had bled out from the wound Dr. Kirkland had inflicted. And silence remained. I froze, now flying solo. If Dr. Kirkland had a hollow plan that he was loosely following, I was now left entirely alone, a ship in open water with no wind. The guard's radio crackled, a deep voice repeatedly asking for an update, but who knows if they knew the exact turns he made to find him, or what was left of him at least. However, one tiny piece of information was the basis for my steps forward. The direction we heard the guard come from was my right, which told me that was the direction of the facility. So I turned left and started walking. I opted not to take the weapon. I had seen it get someone killed more than it saved. The tunnels rewarded agility over brute force, but this didn't ease my mind and the challenges that faced me. Time passing was mental agony. I'd been wandering the tunnels for what must have been hours, sometimes running from the skittering chase of a mole, other times lurking in cutaway channels from the guards. Through the distant chatter I would occasionally hear on their radios, they were looking for only one or two more scientists, but it was still kill on sight. If they would so easily dispose of people a million times more useful than me, I would be squashed like an ant on sight. They wouldn't even think twice. The distance I'd create from the guards did not provide safety. Each step away from them was also a step away from the safety that they used to provide. I was past the protection of their capture, however long they would have lasted. Gunfire broke me out of my thoughts. Nearby, war cries rang out, and footsteps of all types were bouncing around. The lighter skitters, though, were headed towards me, scared off in my direction. I turned on my light, knowing that stealth was no longer an option, and ran away from the noises as fast as I could with my still swollen ankle. The gunfire rang out every so often, screeches of beasts and men intertwined. It was an even fight. Skirmishes that happened sporadically between the mole's retreats and attacks. Hit-and-run tactics. Each battle created more distance between them and me, but they would catch up between fights. Whether intentional or not, each turn I made, they would follow. It was impossible for me to tell if the moles thought my footsteps was one of theirs, back up, leading the guards into a trap, or if they knew the guards were hunting me, setting up a distraction for them to ambush. I dodged around turns, making each choice as randomly as possible, but all the parties were still on my tail. Another skirmish broke out, and it only sounded a few turns away. I was too slow with my hobbling run. It wasn't long until they were on the same corridor as me, so I looked for somewhere to hide, hoping they'd pass by. Fear came over me, knowing this plan had its flaws. Images lingered in my head that they'd find me curled up, or that I was caught in some sort of crossfire. My light lit up a turn that deviated from the tunnel I was in, but the dirt sloped. Something inset caught my light. Color, standing out from the dull brown and grey of the ground, thin and linear. It was my twine. I had somehow made my way back. I rushed up the slope, my legs burning from my monumental journey so far. As soon as I reached the top, I grabbed the handle and paused with a silent prayer. With a make-or-break war cry, I twisted and shouldered the door as hard as I could, expecting resistance. Instead, it flung open with ease, sending me reeling out. I rolled on the ground from the momentum and quickly scrambled to my feet. I slammed the door shut, silencing the battle beneath, and grabbed the heaviest thing nearby, dragging it on top. I had to catch my breath, lost from both exhaustion and adrenaline. I slumped onto my back, the weight of everything keeping me grounded. I was still for the first time in so long, and I was relishing it. The sun was dull, which I estimated to be the late afternoon to early evening. Turning my head gently, I saw where I was. Scrapped cars and discarded belongings scattered around, a crane in the distance that was used to haul mess around into a nearby compactor. It was a dump. My peace was short-lived. I felt a multitude of shakes, but not from the door. My phone buzzed repeatedly in my pocket. I had almost forgotten about it since losing signal while stuck down there. The battery had the slimmest of red lines left. Still, there was enough to see the notifications now rolling in, the signal returning, opening the floodgates of everything I'd missed. Messages and missed calls from work rolled in, ranging from asking to where I was, to anger about skipping a shift, to concern about my whereabouts. Their concern warmed me a little. I had messages blasted from family asking where I was, a range of jokes at first about overdoing it on a late night out, to genuine fear of my well-being. And finally, a single email. It was from the HOA, telling me that I had not removed the mess in time, so they hired some contractors to clear it up. The bill of which would be added to my fine.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com